Blog Talk Radio.
Believe everything the mainstream media tells you? We don't. We cover what mainstream doesn't. Welcome to Beyond the Mainstream with...
There we go. Scott, be nice. You know, you could have called in a little earlier, my friend, so we could have got this straight. Yeah. Okay, we got 734 on, and Scott, yeah, it's yours. Take it away, young man, young stud.
Well, hey, I hope everything's okay in Florida. Your son's okay. I got some family that refused to leave. So, are you there?
Yeah, right here. 734, you're on too. We have a... Was that Rebecca? I'm trying to remember zip codes or area codes or zip codes or whatever how they're called.
734 is me.
Hey, Rebecca. Ohio State. Getting their ass kicked last night. But that's okay.
Yay!
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah,
gotta have a little bit of good news. A little bit of good news and all the stuff that's going on. That's all.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I only get the piece of that next week, don't they?
What's that?
I said Army gets a piece of that next week.
Let's hope.
That's who Ohio State. That's how Ohio plays next week is Army.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
Anyway. Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure all of our thoughts and prayers are with everybody down in Texas and now down in Florida and Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama. It's devastating, I think, what's happening down there. It's weakening. It appears to be weakening, so I would think that'd be a good thing. So, but anyway, did everybody have a good summer?
Yeah,
I
didn't have to talk to you, so it was a wonderful summer, Rebecca.
You are so mean to him. Summer is not my favorite time of the year, so I generally hibernate inside during summer. I do.
Put a G-string on and go outside. Live it up a little bit.
Hey, this is my time of the year. I am in heaven right now. Because I love this weather. It's beautiful.
You are
nice and cool.
Oh.
It's nice and cool, and the smell of bonfires, I love that.
Oh, yeah. Bonfires when it's 40 below zero. That's really good. Yeah. I know why you get along with Scott. You both are missing a couple quarters out of that dollar.
Dang, Scott, we are being attacked tonight.
No, well, I'm saying it with all kinds of love. That's what you do when you know you've got people on the short bus with you. And I'm the driver. Well, I'm glad everybody is happy that it's getting colder. Pretty soon the snow will fly and you'll be ecstatic. You'll just be giddy.
Oh, I will.
Good for you. You Ohio friend.
Right.
Yeah, well.
Well.
I would love to say
I don't know. Under attack is, I guess, would be a good way to put it. I noticed that we're having problems over the summer if people haven't realized. The corporations are bringing in more tier twos. I apologize. I retract that. They are bringing in more permanent temporaries of different flavors.
Permanent.
Go ahead.
No, I just think I didn't mean for you even to hear that. It's a permanent temporary. Jeez. Okay, it just doesn't make sense.
And that is in order so that they can get their side of the money out of the companies. They're getting their little kickback by hiring all these temporary employees.
I agree.
I don't know if I could.
Go ahead, Scott.
I don't know if I could prove that, so to say. But I'm going to say I agree with that sentiment. In light of what's happened this last summer, that statement might be like spot on. Like I said, there's a lot of things that are happening until we get to know what's really going on. Go ahead.
There is so much, but in relation to that statement, I feel like you guys know how much involvement I've had with part-time worker issues, and I had so many conversations with them about putting together actual procedures and in the bylaws and in the Constitution and rights. And for if you're going to have part-time workers in the UAW, you need to be more specific. And to me now, it's like crystal clear why they wouldn't want to do that and why they are so opposed to really making it a solid firm. You have representatives and, that they're thoroughly represented and treated equal. If they do that, they're going to find themselves in the same position of being tied down in money and stuff like that as a full-time worker. So let's keep it all fluid, not give them much, and tell them we can get rid of you whenever we want to, and we're going to save a boatload of money.
Right.
So that's just how I...
Probably hung your letter up, you know. Well, we can't have somebody that is complaining about union dues without having a plan, so they changed it to, what is it again? Temporary. What the hell does that mean? That means they can get their union dues every month and they won't get a letter in the mailbox from a Rebecca. That's what they...
Right. They got three. The big three picked up three new tiers. And everybody knows you have the seniority worker. You have the tier two, which they call in progression, which, by the way, they'll never make the seniority pay scale. They'll come close, but they'll never make what we make. And depending on when you hired in, on your date, you will not qualify for certain bonuses. So that saves them some money. But what we're talking about is tier 3, 4, and 5. You have short-term or flex. We refer to them as flex workers. You only have them 1 or 2 days a week. Then we have long-term temporaries. And, of course, we have permanent temporaries. So.
Sorry.
I could think of somebody who's probably rolling over in their grave right now. Because the whole point of the union was to avoid misusing workers like this, to represent the workers and make them full time and give them their right, what they deserve, benefits. And it is amazing to me, really. But Scott and I talked about this before. It's gotten this bad because the membership is allowing it. Because they're not standing up against them, and so they take advantage of that. And what else can be done? And tell the membership, stops trusting the people who are screwing them and stealing from them, and organize and do something.
Right.
I could be wrong.
Right.
Good point. I think we have Brother Brian on the line. Hang on, let me see if I think he's there.
Hello.
There's that voice. Hello.
What's up?
Hey, Brian.
How you guys doing?
Well,
you guys had a good summer so far.
Yeah, everybody's having a good one. Rebecca's team lost last night. She's packed away her G-string and she's ready to go to work.
I'm celebrating because they lost, right? Brian knows who I'm loyal to.
Well, excuse me. I won't say nothing about that. Okay. You know, wives and husbands are listening.
Oh, come on.
Oh, I didn't
he's
know.
He's just a Michigander, too.
Yeah, but he's in Michigan.
So am I.
No, not quite.
Would somebody please do something?
I'm in a good mood. Go ahead. One of them Brian moves tonight. I have no sleep for a few days. So, there you go. Go ahead, you guys. Discuss. Hash out. Complain. I'm going to be on the phone for a few minutes.
All right. I guess I'll ask what's going on new with you, Brian? I mean, what you can talk about.
Well, as you know, I was at the Labor Day parade, and I was out there protesting the leadership. So let's not get that mistaken. I was protesting the leadership, not the UAW. Dennis Williams wasn't too happy with the signs, but as you know, we're not too happy with them being bought off. So
absolutely.
I've said it. We've been talking this for years. We knew it was happening. Now the truth is out there, and I'm going to say, you know, you can't guarantee 8 years of language in a four-year contract, and we've been saying that. And I look back at the UAW Chrysler modifications to 2007 agreement, and also the 2011, which I don't have on me right now, but the language in there for the 25% cap is in black and white in these books that I have. And it says, right, there shall be no cap on the number of entry-level employees hired through September 14, 2015. As of September 14, 2015, the number of entry-level employees shall be capped as the lesser of 25% or the existing entry-level percentage. And those entry-level employees, by seniority, above the cap, if any, shall be transitioned to traditional employee status. Well, of course, the UAW leadership said they never signed off on it, but it's black and white in these books. And we based our ratification vote off of what we've seen in these books. So if they didn't sign off, that means they lied and deceived the membership for the ratification vote. And next week, I'm going to talk to a law firm on these issues and the fact of our negotiating team that took bribes and how it influenced our negotiation process. And I believe I have enough proof against the UAW to show that those gifts influenced our negotiation process. And that's why they use Chrysler as the lead
the lead
plant, right? So we'll see what happens. I mean, all I can say is right now things are in the works. I am talking to people. I also filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board. I'm waiting for them to get back to me so that I can go down there and they can take my deposition. And there's a couple of us going down there. So when I first went down there, of course, we got in some arguments, which didn't surprise me because the way they read the law and the way I read the law are two different things. So, and then after that, since we were already down there in the federal building, we stopped at the Federal Bureau Investigations, and we asked them if they can do a complete financial audit on the UAW, including the strike fund and the interest on that strike fund. And I'm still waiting for them to get back with me. And we also stopped at the Department of Labor, which has an ongoing investigation along with the FBI. So they're not going to open another case because they already had a case open. So, I mean, we just got to see what happens. You know, we look at the indictments and look at the convictions and see where it goes.
Right. Right. Real quick, I'm looking at the sign that you held up so that all the listeners can understand what your sign said. It says, the UAW leadership does not support equality or the rights of its members. So that's not attacking the membership. That is directly at the leadership. And then somebody else was with you. Their sign says, fight for the IUAW leadership reform. One member, one vote. That'd be awesome. As you know, this whole problem, internally, they are self-governing. But like you said, this is stuff way outside that realm now, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, what have you heard, Rebecca, as far as, I mean, what you could talk about that you know about what's going on with Chrysler, if you can?
Well, I have heard quite a bit. Not sure how much I can really share, except for that I think that it's, I don't know that people will be surprised that there are more indictments to come. Many more indictments to come. And I know that they are utilizing that Taft-Hardy and the RICO statute to group them together and prosecute them. The RICO statute, I don't know if you guys are familiar with what that is, but that was actually established to deal with the mafia way back when, you know, you had people, you know, committing murders, but it wasn't, they were just fall guys, you know, throwaway people, and they wanted the big people, and so they came up with this way to catch them, and so they started using that, and then they used it on gangs, and so they just expanded it, so the UAW fits into that as an organization, and so those who have been working with General Holyfield, and I can never say the guy's name from Chrysler, you know, in that whole frame there.
You talk about Acapella?
Yes, thank you. I just can't think, I don't know why. But yeah, they are a subject in that statute. They can be charged. So there's going to be a lot more from what I understand, and that's about all I can say, I think. Except for that, I also, you know, and I think, you know, Brian, you said it, or at least alluded to it, that our contracts are void now. They accepted bribes and many other things during our contract negotiations, and so all that stuff is up in the air. Now, my understanding from some attorneys is that the FBI doesn't have to prove that they affected our contract because it's just in the law that what they did was illegal. So they don't have to prove
but we do. We do have
exactly.
to prove that.
We do have to. And so if, you know, the companies that come back and say, oh, I'm bad, let's redo this for you. We as a membership have to get it together and say, we want it renegotiated. And then there's a couple problems here because it's getting the membership together who we can't seem to get together. And then the other problem is, who do we have negotiated? We're not, who are we going to trust? You know, I mean, there's just a couple, you know, pretty big things out there. But right now, you know, we're just hanging in the wind, I think.
Well, this is the thing. And I've said it before. The fact is, Bob King knew about this. He told them to stop. But Bob King did not fire them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Nor did he call for an investigation to make sure it was stopped, okay? So that's one. Dennis Williams was the financial secretary at the time. And since this is a joint venture between Chrysler and the union, that means Dennis Williams was overseeing the finances to NTC because he had to know how much was in that pot to determine how many people he can send to NTC for training. So for him not to know, I'm kind of dumbfounded. So, and the fact that James Hardy got busted selling two-tier jobs and then ratted out General Holyfield, and again, Dennis Williams did not fire them nor investigate it, and now they're coming out telling us this had nothing to do with negotiations, and we did a thorough investigation ourselves, and we find ourselves to be innocent, so to say, is a bunch of hogwash. So
right.
it surprises me that Bob King and Dennis Williams did not do nothing to General neither time. There was,
right.
I mean, the fact that they soiled our union and gave and just made our union look unethical. They could have stopped this from the beginning had Bob King or Dennis Williams done what they were supposed to and fired them right off the bat without pensions, without everything. But they didn't do
that.
So that just tells you how corrupt they are.
With that being said, you said shows how unethical they are unethical. Okay, I mean, I'm going to change the verbiage on it. They are unethical. They knew
right.
about this. You're absolutely right. All these people down here at Solidarity House, it's a tight-knit group. It's not, you know, it's a big building, but at that level, they communicate daily. People know what's going on. And if I remember right, didn't the Free Press article, didn't Icabelli, I think it was his name, the guy that was the manager portion from FCA.
Later, him.
And then he got picked up by General Motors. Now, General Motors fired him because of his involvement with this stuff going on. They don't want their
hands. Well, they didn't fire him. I could have swore they just suspended him.
Oh, okay, you're right. Yeah, they suspended him. Mm-hmm. Probably got pay coming, too. So their hands are going to be a little bloody in this stuff. I shouldn't say bloody. Dirty.
And let's not forget that Norwood Jewell, his secretary, asked for Dell King to buy him a shotgun as a birthday gift. So you're going to tell me that Norwood Jewell didn't know that his secretary and Verdell King was involved in this?
Right.
Well,
because he paid the money back. So how did he find out? I mean, you know, I think
right,
the fact that he knew the investigation was coming, and so therefore he paid it back to make it look like he didn't know nothing about it.
Right. I'm looking at Ward's article right now, and that's the part that I pulled up, was that Jewell, according to federal investigators, received a shotgun valued at $2,180 as a birthday gift in 2015. Jewell, however, did not know the gun had been purchased with the funds from the training center and reimbursed the money when he discovered the expenditure of company and union funds. Okay, to begin with, he's not supposed to be receiving gifts anyway. You know,
the other question is what the news is not telling us is when did he pay that money back? How far after the fact that he took that gift did he pay that money back to NTC?
I'm pretty sure that's in the indictment, and unfortunately, I don't have it with me. That it says when he did that. I'm pretty sure it does. So he did find out about it. How long he knew about it. If he found out about it, then that makes him responsible at that very moment to do something.
The difference is, though, he took the gifts from other union employees. He didn't take the gifts from management. So that's a difference, and they're going to look at that.
Right. But he still fits under the RICO statute that he can still
right.
be. That statute allows them to charge him with the very same crimes that they're charging the other people with because it's an organization.
All the way from Bob King to Dennis Williams should be charged because they knew of these things and they didn't do anything to stop it. So to me, I mean, because they knew of it, they should be charged as well.
And they may be. I honestly don't know who else is going to be charged, but I have heard that there are going to be many more. So.
Yeah. Real quick,
if I knew you were committing a crime and I didn't report it, I would be in trouble as well under the law.
Exactly.
So I think they should be.
So,
I'm sorry, Scott.
I want to say this real quick, okay, for the people who are on this show right now. We are just speaking of our own opinion, and, you know, we're not saying this as is. We know there are facts out there. We are speaking as our opinion so that nobody can, for better purposes, legally come back after us.
Rebecca, allegedly.
Alleged, right.
The word you gotta use, or I'm gonna get sued. And we wouldn't want that. Would
yes.
We?
No. So
these are just opinions based off of what we've read in the media, and that's about it. I mean, it is opinions, but I will say this: go ahead, Scott. I just lost my thought process.
Okay. No. Well. As you're talking about. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I need to make sure that we cover ourselves here on the show.
Right.
That people understand we're talking. Rebecca's talking about opinion. You're talking opinion. My opinion. It's our personal feelings. We're not saying that this is some things. There are things that we can prove that are legal documents that are out there in the public that we may talk about. Public knowledge. And this article that I'm reading from Ward's, the pieces that I pulled out here, is that, that Norwood Jewell in 2015 had a key role in the contentious talks with the FCA. Okay, so you guys turned down the first contract over Wembley, and they brought back and sweetened it up and whatever, and then they pushed it through. Like you said, these guys are all tight, Go back a few years and remember what Dick Danson told you guys. These guys talk with their counterparts almost daily. So whoever it is from the UAW, whoever their counterpart is, whether it's at Fiat Chrysler or if it's at Ford or if it's at General Motors, these people talk. And we know that public knowledge from the paper article we read that Mary Barrett has talked to certain people, occasionally Dennis Williams, but we know that Dennis Williams and Sergio are friends. So there's history there. So it doesn't surprise me what Brian's saying, that if this whole thing takes a domino effect, that, this could all go all the way back to regional directors. And
right.
Maybe forward.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I absolutely agree with that. And I do want to say the same that you guys have said. And maybe we have all been keeping up on it, and maybe some people don't realize that what we are talking about has been heavily in the news in our area. So in Michigan, Detroit, I mean, that's where we're all focused at. And so if you're somewhere else and don't hear this stuff you don't catch it on the national news, this stuff has been in the paper. Actually my husband's been saving some and then we have the actual indictments out there on the internet, and people want to check. I actually don't know where I didn't get my copy off of that, but somebody gave it to me who got it off there, I think.
I posted both of them.
Oh, you did? Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
So there's just there is a lot of information maybe that people aren't aware that that's out there that we're discussing and that we understand. I know I just am a research kind of person. I like to understand things. And so when I initially heard about that, that's when I looked into the different laws and the Taft-Hardy, how that affects it and everything like that. So all that stuff is stuff that people can catch, on
the internet. Another thing that you said, Rebecca, I mean, is now once these people They go through their indictments and they're criminally charged, and they start clearing out the Solidarity House. The question is who's going to take their place?
Exactly.
And that's the key right there, because whoever it's going to be, it's got to be somebody that has the knowledge to negotiate in a global economy, and somebody that we as a membership can trust. Because mm-hmm. when I hear the members talking about, well, let's put our union dues what the hell is that account?
Trust fund?
Yeah, trust fund, or they talk about pulling their union dues or whatever. But I said it before, look, you can put it in a trust fund, but all the leadership's going to do, because they got to pay the bills, they're going to take it from somewhere else. And if you guys collapse this union, we're going to have nothing to fight management with after the fact. So that's something to think about. We're not here to collapse the union. We're here for leadership reform, and that's it. That's all we need is leadership reform. Now, as I said before, sending delegates down to the convention, all we're doing is spinning the same wheels, because once they get wined and dined, they forget what they're down there for, and there's no way to hold these delegates accountable. And so, the process was designed by the leadership. And we keep spinning the same wheels trying to get different results, and that's just not going to happen. So unless the federal government has indictments on all of these people at the Solidarity House and gets them out, then possibly we'll get our leadership reformed through that way. But either way, we still need to find individuals to replace them, and they got to be outside people. Well, let me rephrase that. It's got to be people from the floor that know this union, that's got the knowledge, because we can't take any more of, Ghetto Finger back in Bob King back in Dennis Williams back in Cindy Estrada, or whatever. We can't take no more of this. They got to be all cleaned out, and we got to start fresh. So, the membership's going to start, they're going to have to start putting their head together. We got a lot of leaders in the union, and you guys need to start putting a slate together and think about taking charge of this union and helping out your union brothers and sisters. I don't have enough experience to sit there and say that I could take one of these positions. I was a steward and I was a chair. But I don't think I had the confidence enough to fill one of those top positions. Could I be part of the team? Sure, I could be, and I'd be glad to be part of the team to help out. But it's I can tell you right now, I do not have the experience, and I don't feel comfortable. I think there's a lot of knowledgeable people out there. Both Scotts, as far as I'm concerned, are both knowledgeable people, and I think would be great. Possibly Rebecca as well. But for me, I don't have that confidence in myself to be able to do that. But like I said, I would probably make a good asset to the team. We have to start coming up with what our next plan is, because if these indictments do go through, or these convictions, then we got to look at the next phase. What are we going to do next? And how is this union going to proceed forward once these people are convicted? So, I mean that's something to look about. Then we have Ford CEO and General Motors CEO said they're not going to investigate their side of the NTC to see if there was any wrongdoings. And now you just got Ford CEO said he's going to make Wall Street hold off, and they're going to get with the UAW leadership to give their vision on moving forward. And that's kind of weird. Why wouldn't you go to your shareholders first? You're going to go to the UAW leadership and share your vision with Ford's future first. And that just shows you how close the UAW and management are, because in order for these companies to make record profits off the backs of the membership, they're using our leadership against us, and the proof is in the pudding. And so, I mean, it's time for the membership to stand up to this leadership.
Yeah, on so many levels and so many different issues as well, not just, you know, I just put out a thing last night at work because the UAW is pushing that conductor position. It's going to lose, we're going to lose our skilled trades, a big part of our skilled trades if they keep doing that. And then they're putting our workers at risk by having them do a skilled trades job. Something as simple, not that it's simple, something like that is just one of the smaller things, and it's not small, that is happening, and the UAW leadership has pushed it. Why are they pushing something that would lose members their jobs?
Because they've been helping the companies cut the fat before the bankruptcy. When you look at Chrysler back before 2008, they got rid of security. They got rid of housekeeping, St. Louis minivan, Detroit Axle. I mean, they were just cutting, and this was before bankruptcy. And now when you look at since bankruptcy, we didn't have no right to strike. They got alternative work schedules. They got tier system. They got TPTs. They got rid of job descriptions. They combined the classifications for the trades. I mean, so on and so forth. I mean, they've been negotiating these contracts in favor of the companies. And these companies came out of bankruptcy in less than a year, and they've been making record profits since then. You guys got to remember, these are global companies. So you can talk about North American losses all you want, but I want to know what this company has gained globally. So don't talk to me about losses in a particular sector. I want to know what your gains are through South America, North America, Europe, Asia, because they're playing each country's labor market against each other, and they're making us think that they're broke, and we're taking the losses.
Right.
So you right. guys got to wake up to that stuff, because we're getting hit awful hard. And then their threats are, well, if you don't like it, we'll ship your jobs overseas.
Right. Now, what's part of what you're talking about is the federal grand jury in Detroit had indicted Vice President Alphonse, is it Ocabelli, on a charge of siphoning off, you know, the money for his funds and stuff. But it's also was money, $1.2 million in training fund money was used to influence the key UAW officials over a six-year period from 2009 to 2015. In 2011, Chrysler alone lost 9 trades out of hand, just with a stroke of a pen, gone. And then, as Brian talked about, then we pushed the tier system higher, increased that, do away with a number of temps you have because you can't permit temporaries now, so there is no cap on the temps. You didn't get very little for a raise that you hadn't had a raise in 13 years. You didn't get your cost of living back. You didn't get tradespeople back. And in my opinion, this shows that if they were told to be kept fat, dumb, and happy, and that's exactly what they did.
And the fact is that 25% language was there, and they didn't honor that language. It's black and white. I have it. And not just they didn't honor that language, but like I told you before, they cannot guarantee 8 years of language in a four-year contract. They are not bringing all the tiers up in 8 years because you can't guarantee that language. So they bamboozled you guys in believing that they're going to bring you all up.
Well, I don't think they bamboozled.
Right.
I don't know how it passed because everybody I hear talk about it, whether it's online or in person, they say, there's no way we're going to get that. There's no way. Well, okay. What did you vote for the contract for? Somebody voted for the contract.
Well, either they're stuffing, either they're stuffing the ballots, or they're rigging it somehow. But if you remember, they blocked the skilled trades vote, and they shut the skilled trades down. So, I mean, you see the corruption is there.
Ford, I mean, we see what happened at Ford, right? Jimmy Sellers was out and at the Rouge and has a media day down there, and they're out on the floor. And we know what happened with that. I mean, it's crazy. It's all very overwhelming if you put all this stuff down and was to write this down on a piece of paper, all the things that we're talking about at one time. I mean, how can you not see it? Write this stuff down and look at it. And it would make sense to those of people that have been working for one of these corporations for more than 20 years. What you lost and what Lula has gotten back in the last two contracts that you lost coming out of bankruptcy, I mean, look and see what you've done. Like Ryan says, they've all had record profits. May not have been huge. Some have done better than others, but they still had record profits. So, and then when you look at, I think you've lost as far as what it was, and then you might be able to put your head around a little bit that the bottom line for us is lost wages, your income. You know, now they're attacking your job viability because of classification changes and the money that's being had here. These indictments are the tip of the iceberg. I think this is going to go a lot deeper. And
yeah, the problem is the membership is so divided. I mean, when I went down to the Labor Day parade, you wouldn't believe how many angry people I had shouting at me because of me standing up for what I believed.
Really?
Right? I mean, people were calling me a liar, anti-union, calling me a Republican. I mean, they were saying all kinds of stuff. I mean,
wow.
But I didn't care. You got to remember, most of those people at the Labor Day parade got an appointed position, or they're got an elected position, or whatever. But those are all the kiss asses down there at that Labor Day parade. Majority of them.
Right.
So of course they're going to believe that because they don't want their piece of cake taken off their plate.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I said it before, because these people keep talking about, we should set up committees within our locals. How are you going to do that? Now, you're going to set up a committee, and you're going to meet in some anonymous place somewhere, and then your local leadership's going to find out, and what do you think they're going to do? They're going to tell management, and they're going to start picking you off one by one because your locals are divided. There is no way you can set up a committee and make that work. Because I'm telling you, once your leadership finds out, your local leadership, they're going to run to management, and they're going to pick you off one by one. The committees are not going to
work. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's not going to work. I don't see it working because the locals are too divided to make that work. And then once management finds out, they're going to come after you. So there's only two ways to fix this. And I've said it before, either through the FBI, through the convictions, or through the Solidarity House gates. That's the only way you're going to change this, because setting up committees or keeping your union dues ain't going to do nothing but collapse the union.
What's going to happen with these indictments? You know, this has been going on, if I remember right, reading one article, for a year now. A year they've been looking at this. I'm hearing that they have gotten snapshots of the financial books. And that's, to us that have been around for a while, we all know that that seems to be the golden ring, is the financial books. That's what we want to see. And if they've gotten snapshots of that, then we have a clue. We have a hope. But with that being said also, now you have to wait the due process. Like you said, Brian and Rebecca said, well, who are we going to have run this? Well, we don't know yet. We don't know how far this is going to go and how housing it cleaned up. The National Labor Board, I believe, and the Department of Labor would have to get involved in this, Brian, because the Department of Labor oversees our contracts.
Well, the Department of Labor is already doing an investigation. They're doing an investigation as we speak.
Right. Now, they could force the UAW have some people who would be, I guess you'd say, almost per diem or temporary positions, and they would probably have to, I imagine, they have to hire some CPAs to do some elections. It's gonna get nasty. The other option you'd have, one is what you're doing, National Labor Review Board, the National Labor Board. The other one is you'd have to have people come together with a class action lawsuit against the union. Could be, you know.
Which is in the process right now.
That would probably be the best way to go about doing this because, like you said, if there's only two federal investigations being done, and then you have, and I'm sure if there's one, there will end up being multiple lawsuits going. And there could be lawsuits filed on behalf of Fiat Chrysler members, Ford members, General Motors members. People, like, you know what I'm saying? There could be a lot behind this. And if you get the right lawyer, you know, I make sure he's not tied with anybody because a lot of lawyers will not take a case to UAW if they're in Detroit, let alone in the state of Michigan.
Well, I've already found one.
There was a fellow at one time. We talked about this fellow on the show years ago with Mr. Dangin. His name was Dunn, I believe, and he was a labor lawyer out of Detroit. He had, at one time, was on staff at International. They blackballed him out, and ever since then, he has not liked the UAW Solidarity House. And,
well, you know, a lot of these lawyers are tied to legal services. That's why they won't take the case.
Right. Right, and they figure that if they have to go somewhere, it's in the home state. If you go down to Detroit, it's a hard game of cards to play down there. You know what I mean? And in Michigan, it could be hard.
Not just that, the case could be very costly.
Yes, and if a lawyer who is picking this up as a class action lawsuit, yeah, we would all would pony up some money. But I'm sure there's a constituency that on his payback would be depending on how much the payout would be back to the memberships, he would get a portion of that. So, he could almost go pro bono on that. It's not pro bono. Is it pro bono? If I do this for free unless there's money paid out, I can't remember what the legal phrase is, but
you mean contingency? Contingency?
Well, that could be. Yeah, it might be the contingency that if, let's say, they sue for $500 million on behalf of the UAW membership, and that's to be spread out over the Fiat, Chrysler, General Motors, Ford, and then the temporaries because they pay in less union dues than we do. They would all get – anybody who's a member of the union at that time would get a part of this settlement. And he would get I might be mistaken. The last time I knew, lawyers were getting 30% of whatever the settlement was. So
They get a third.
That's a big chunk of change, man. If you used to, settle for $500 million out of court, big chunk of change. So, I mean, that's just a scenario. That's just one scenario. There's a lot of scenarios that can continue to go on. So,
there's got to be a way for union members on General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler side to get together and build a slate, because this is the time to do this. Why the union is down, why the UAW leadership is down, this is the time to get in there, get that slate come June, and start getting out there and getting the people's attention. So when June happens at the convention, they can run against Cindy Estrada, whoever they're going to run against, you know, because we have to get them out.
Right. And that I agree with 100%. Now is the time to make sure that you have your constitutional delegates literally tied up right now and supporting who the people, not who they would like to see there, but who we need. And we know right now that the current administration can't have any.
You there?
Are there? Hello?
Something must have happened to Scott.
We're there. Or we're still on. I don't know. My son's on the phone, and he's in Florida. If you haven't, that's why I haven't been on. Scott keeps hanging up on himself, if you know what I mean. He's wearing a helmet, too, by the way. We'll talk. Okay, Scott, you're back. Go ahead, son.
Hey, man, I was sitting there talking, and all of a sudden I heard a beep, and I'm off.
I know.
I'm talking to myself.
That little cheek.
there's a lot going on. We're only going to 8 o'clock tonight, so
wrap it up here. I'm going to change it back. Hold on, Scott. I got
to
change it.
Wait a minute. You want to go to, if you want to go to 8:30, we can go to 8:30.
Yeah, I put it to 8:30 because your guys are, every time I checked in,
okay.
you're getting me
all
more
right.
and more trouble with lawyers and UAW. So,
okay, we'll go to 8:30.
Okay.
What was that old song? Send lawyers, guns, and money. The shit has hit the fan.
I don't know what music you listen to, Scott, but you know. That's not what I was.
That was.
Yeah.
Hey, that one came back from your day, brother. That's back in the 70s. Anyway.
Yeah, 70s. My ass. We had class in the 70s,
so,
brother. And Led Zeppelin. Leave me alone. Goodbye.
So,
well,
I'm not
sure that a slate is going to be something the membership's going to trust right now, because that's what we have in there is a slate. You know,
what's the purpose of a strike? What's the purpose of a strike?
Did you think I said strike?
Yeah. What is the purpose of a strike?
To draw attention to whatever your reason for going out on is.
It's a negotiating tool. It's your biggest negotiating tool. And I agree with what you just said. Not only is it a tool, you can also use that to turn the negotiations around. But to have a strike, you have to have leadership. So I agree with you. If you strike right now, what could you do? Because you have no leadership.
Oh, no,
okay,
no. I didn't say strike. I said
just,
slate. He was
talking
said, about putting
to build, to, she wants to build. We were talking about building a leadership slate.
I'm not sure the membership could trust the slate right now, because that's what we have in there is the slate.
Right.
You know, they've picked each other.
Yeah, but this is the thing. You have to build a team that's going to work for GM, Ford, and Chrysler. Right. What you got now in the leadership is a bunch of bought off stockholders. So they got to get out. And right now, the leadership now has no integrity whatsoever. So the membership don't have a choice but to focus on building a slate because they have no other choice out there. What other choice do we have? Right? We have to build a slate. An honest slate, of course. Right. But, I mean, the fact is, is the union lost its integrity because of these people taking gifts and selling out our contracts. So now we have to find somebody that's willing to replace them, that's got the integrity and got the knowledge and the skill to negotiate in a global economy. We have no other choice. That's the only way around this.
Right. And I mean, so you said. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I agree. You still have to step out in faith and hope that you're picking a good enough slate to do the right thing for you on behalf of the membership. That's all I was going to say.
Now the question is, how do we go about picking the slate? And how do we get these people together? That's that's the question.
And that was my next thing. That's how do you determine that? You know, so many people still are under the impression that if you have 30 years or 20 years in seniority, that you would be a good committee man, when it's a different set of skills. It's important that you understand all that. But it's more important that you have a commitment to the best interest of the union and your brothers and sisters as a whole, I think. When you are short-sighted and have a vision that is only to your area or you and your group, then that's a problem. At least that's what I've seen in around here, you know. I hope that it's different in different places. I don't know, but so they instead of picking, it's still a popularity thing, is I guess what I would maybe lean that towards. Instead of I may not like this person, but that person knows what they're talking about. That kind of thing, you know.
Well, the UAW has built this website that supposedly touts Buy American. So there's no reason why the union can't set up a page to where anybody that's willing to run as a candidate for these positions or a slate can get on this union, the UAW site, and start campaigning. It should be open to all members.
I don't think you can just post to that site. I think
what I'm saying is they can make a site and open it up to the membership for that purpose.
Okay, yeah.
It wouldn't be difficult.
But that's not what they want to do. That's not their goal. They have their goal of wanting their certain people, and they're not going to open up.
I understand, but maybe the Department of Labor force that, just like they did with the Teamsters. Remember with the Teamsters, they forced that one member, one vote, remember? So maybe the Department of Labor can force to where the union's got to set up some type of page that, because after all of these convictions, we're going to have somebody fill these positions. So maybe something can be set up to where these people can campaign on the union website, and the members can, you know, they can tie themselves to that website and hear what these people got to say. You know, they put their resume out there and tell us what their skill level is, what classes they've taken, what positions they held.
Right.
Now, you know,
just because somebody might not have held a position might not mean that they wouldn't be a good leader. Understand that in 1979 contract, it took an eighth grade education to read and comprehend your national contract. Now it takes short of having a law degree to try to figure out this contract. If it's that bad. When that happens, there will be legal teams set up somewhere. There has to be, because corporations are going to have their lawyers. The union is going to have their lawyers. It's just, it's a mess. It's going to be an overwhelming mess. We have
they might
to
have
push
their,
through it.
They might have their lawyers, but the Department of Labor, after these convictions, they're going to set the process.
They won't want to see it. That's true.
How long did it take for them to set? I don't know. You may not know this, but to set that up for the Teamsters, because we're looking at a time frame here that's coming up pretty fast. I mean, it may sound like a ways, but it's not.
I think it was one of the settlement deals, so I'm not exactly sure how long it took them to set it up, but it was one of the settlement deals to get the Teamsters. To keep the FBI from overseeing the Teamsters.
Yeah.
Well,
it
that's
was,
the thing.
It was a process.
Because we have that. That's coming up, you know, next year. And it's my understanding it's around April-ish that we have to have the proposed changes on and anything we want to include for that constitutional convention to get to that committee. That's coming fast. And it's organizing to get things changed. I mean, because we're talking about at this level of who's running and stuff, but we also need to think about, we need to be thinking about getting that kind of stuff in writing that, you know, there is, you guys know this, but maybe some people don't, there is nothing in the Constitution that allows us to hold leadership accountable and a way to vote them out, and it needs to be there. And that needs to be put together before this date when it's due, you know. They're not going to want it there, but we still need to prepare for that kind of thing and get it ready. So, there's multiple layers of things that need to be done for the membership.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of them is the one member, one vote. That could go on the floor at the next convention.
Right.
You know, so we can push that. I mean, we can push maybe the increase in the strike fund, since they increased our union dues a half hour, just, you know, so if we go on strike, instead of getting $200 a week, maybe we can get $350 a week.
Mm-hmm. But that's
you know,
up for a vote.
Right.
That's up for a vote again. That doesn't necessarily have to say.
Well, no, that's I agree, but those are things that we should be fighting for, and we should also make it easier to get a union leadership for unbecoming of a union official. So if they're taking gifts or whatever, there's got to be an easier process to get them out. And all these things can be set on the floor. There's a what?
There is no process to get them out right now.
Right. That's why I'm saying we need to put something together, put these motions on the floor. And hopefully we can get the membership together, the delegates or whoever's going down there, to stick together and put these motions on the floor and vote them in. Mm-hmm. And don't let the leadership override you. You guys need to stick together on this. Enough of the leadership controlling you guys. You guys need to take that control back. You guys remember something. We pay union dues for representation. That means the leadership is supposed to be our employees. We do not work for the UAW. You guys need to take that control back.
Right.
And I've been saying that. I think we've all been saying that for years. But people don't know what to do. And if you say in a meeting to your chairman, hey, this is what we want, and we want you to do it. How do you think that's going to go over? I know in some that I know of that wouldn't go over at all.
But listen, the UAW leadership controls the region and they control the local levels. Okay?
Yeah.
They don't control the delegates. The delegates can go down there as long as they stick together. They can put a motion on the floor and they can get it passed if they show some solidarity. And that's what needs to be done.
Right. And call for a verbatim vote, a paper vote, not a show of hands.
I agree.
A paper vote. And that way we know that way.
And it must be counted, and it must be counted by humans, not a machine.
Right.
But this is all stuff that's not in the bylaw or the constitution or anything, so it doesn't have to happen. Right? That stuff needs to get worked out.
No. It is there. At the constitution, let's say if the three of us was at the convention and we call for a verbatim vote. And we overwhelmingly rule that 50% plus one vote off the floor, they have to do a paper ballot on a vote. They have to. That is there.
Okay.
It's in place. So when people try that, though, they shut them down very quickly. Scott Holdison at the last convention, remember he tried? So they said he was interrupting. They shut him down. And then when
they did the ball horns and all that.
Yeah, and that was afterwards. Scott Holdison would be a great person to think about with some of this stuff. They wrote a resolution that's amend the UAW Constitution for free and fair contract ratification process. And it's great. And it's a step. But Brian's right. The control from Solidarity House, it's like a spider web, and it goes all the way down to each local, because a lot of the shop chairmen are trying to get over to either to a regional spot or maybe get called down to Solidarity House somewhere.
Yeah, you guys got to remember, it was your local leadership that sold these sold-out contracts to you, and it was the local leadership that pushed the increase on union dues. So they have an agenda, and their agenda is to be part of Dennis Williams' team to get down to the region or the Solidarity House. So you, as a member, are going to have to step against your local leadership, and you guys are going to have to come together and do it yourselves, because your local leadership's not going to do it for you.
Right. Right. You've got to send somebody that's not elected currently to any position. Somebody off the floor that you want to be your constitutional delegate that's going to go vote in the process of which we're talking about. That's all there is to it. You're going to have to support, a person who is going to go be a delegate for you that's going to be the voice for you at the at the constitutional convention. That's what you're going to have. So,
but you need leaders.
That being said,
you need leaders, good delegates, good leaders that are willing to step against the leadership that's at the Solidarity House now. Because if you guys are going to cower down at that convention, then you guys are just wasting your time.
Right. A lot of times these guys are taken in by regions, and they're told how to vote. They're either, I don't know, never been there. I can just go by with what I was told. But they're told what they need, what the Solidarity House needs, or what the International Executive Board needs, and the regional directors will try to sway them into their line of thinking. And
all I can say is don't let them. Yeah, don't tell them how. Don't let those people tell you what they need and how you need to think or how you need to vote. You guys need to think for yourselves.
Right.
And look at these contracts that we've been dealing with and realize that they're going to tell you anything that they have to, just like they hired a PR firm to sell these contracts. They're going to lie and deceive you. So you need to go against the status quo and do the right thing for the membership and stand up against this leadership.
Right. What you need is at that time is you need a delegate that will look at the regional director and tell them, don't tell us how to vote. Scary part for a lot of people. So, just saying,
Well, what's really scary is us losing everything, because they're backfilling with TPTs and we're losing jobs and we're losing rights and all these other things. They're not even meeting grievances anymore. And if they do meet grievances, only half meeting a grievance.
Right. Right. Well, it's something. It is.
Well, that grievance thing is a whole nother ball of wax. mess up. So, yeah.
Well, you guys already know how I feel, and I've been saying it for a long time. And I've been set up ever since they agreed to scab out housekeeping, and they gave Chrysler cheaper labor. Why, they turned around and unionized that contract house behind my back, and they were still able to get union dues from these people. I mean, that's so unethical. The fact that they took stock in the very companies we work for is unethical. The fact that they took gifts from the management is unethical. I mean, the fact that they agreed to a tier system is unethical. I mean, the list goes on. Now, you guys want to keep falling into play with these people down at the convention, this leadership, then you guys are going to continue to get sold out. So you guys make up your minds now what you guys are going to do. You're either going to step up and lead, or you're going to be led.
Right. 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 Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, amen.
Yeah.
I mean But something I'm sorry.
I got something. Well, I want to kind of change the tone here real quick for just a few minutes, because we're on our last 19 minutes. I want to read something to you. This came from our local. Brothers and sisters, I have spent a very difficult week learning about the changes made in the 2015 National Agreement surrounding outsourcing. During the 2007 national negotiations, there were sub-assembly operations that were identified as uncompetitive at the existing wage structure. These operations are referred to as value-added assembler or VAA products. To protect these jobs, the union agreed to a two-tiered wage structure and gained a moratorium on outsourcing. This work was then protected by the cost competitive of having a 25% of UAW members being paid at a lower wage. In 2015, the UAW successfully brought all two-tier employees to an in-progression wage scale, significantly raising employees' wages. Because of this agreement, the company could no longer support the work that was deemed uncompetitive in 2007. To counterbalance this position, the UAW bargained Document 60, which requires any outsourcing to be governed by the intent of the moratorium. Consequently, the company is required to offset every outsourced job with a new job composed of work we are not currently doing. Locally, I thought we'd be going through a traditional Appendix L on these commodities identified as a VAA product. This allows the union to present a business case to retain the work. But now, this only applies to insourcing work. After careful review, we could not have been successful in our business case anyway. Therefore, Document C is one for offset is much better process for securing jobs long term. Although there seems to be a negative side to this agreement, wage agreement. Wait a minute, I lost a spot here. For an offset and much better process for securing jobs long term. Although there seems to be a negative side to everything good, I still support the increase in wages provided by the in-progression wage agreement. It is fundamental to a union that we all share the same quality of life, and that the 2015 National Agreement is a giant step in that direction. Applying Document 60, the company has made a program decision to outsource the VAA work, which means the impact will be the same at every truck plant in the United States. The VAA products that are affected are the headliner, rear axle, radiator, fore console, and the front hubs. We will continue to build these commodities for the duration of the build, but they will be outsourced for the next model. The members are currently doing this work do not need to leave their jobs now. There will be plenty of opportunities for special application moves, team leader promotions, job picks in the department war rooms prior to the work being outsourced. The shop committee is currently working through the manpower impact and the validity of the offers they are claiming. Even though we are disputing their numbers, there are hundreds of new jobs composed of work we are not currently doing. The shop committee is working diligently to ensure that the company satisfies the intent of Document 60. These are hard issues for union leaders to deal with and communicate to the workforce. But I feel it's better to share with you as soon as I have credible information, and I will continue to keep you informed as it is developed. In solidarity, Chairman Local 598, Eric Walter. Now, since this was wrote just this last week, we found out that we're losing more work than what's being said in this letter, and we're not being told about it. So, with what he said, he adhered and he thought that the 2015 agreement was a good agreement. That's our chairman. So what do we do with that?
Well,
any ideas?
Look, I've been telling you guys what world-class manufacturing and world-class logistics, the purpose is to make
sure.
The companies smart and lean. But it has not secured any jobs at all. You guys are giving up your ideas to make this company smart and leaner, and all you're doing is lining the stockholders' pockets, the shareholders' pockets.
And losing jobs. And losing
jobs. Losing jobs. Now, these non-core, when the tier system came out, the two-tier were supposed to be doing non-core jobs, but that didn't happen.
Right.
They're doing every job on the floor now. So you guys are being lied to, and you're being deceived. The membership needs to back out of WCL and WCM and stop participating in these joint ventures that are killing off the membership and selling our jobs out. Now, you guys want to be part of that team? Go ahead. But when you lose your job tomorrow, don't complain. So you want to do something? Back out of WCM and WCL because it ain't doing nothing but killing your jobs.
Right, right.
World-class manufacturing and world-class logistics is only working for the company. It's not working for the membership. We've been taking the hits, and the company's getting the profits.
What? I guess my question to you is, what was the purpose then of the vice president of said department, whether it be Chrysler, General Motors, or Ford? For all these people who are the vice presidents to adhere to their manufacturing systems and push that on the floor then. Is that a good question?
I didn't quite understand it.
Okay. All right. What you had was Jimmy Suttles, who cannot run again. You've got Des Williams, who cannot run again. But anyway, you've got Jimmy Suttles, and you had Thorwood Jewell and Cindy Estrada. They all adhered to with their management team member for these lean manufacturing systems or this lean technology, whether it's worldwide this or that or Ford's lean and then a General Motors, it's global manufacturing systems, okay? It does nothing to protect our jobs. And like I said, presidents pushed this through on the contract. They adhere to it. Cindy Estrada thought that this was a great idea. She embraced it fully. Now, if you know it's going to cut your membership's job and it's going to outsource work down the road, why would you be glad for that?
Because the UAW has become a contract house. They're no longer a representative of labor no more. They can care less because whoever comes in on the shop floor, they're still taking union dues from them. I mean, you look at Caravan Knights. It's a contract house. They're unionized.
Right.
They don't care. They're still going to get their union dues no matter whether it's a contract house, whether they're TPTs or whatever they are. And the company's going to continue to get cheap labor.
Right. And it's going to get to a point where I think that the temporary workforce is going to be the same, if not outnumber the seniority workers. There's not going to be. We are the last of our kind. We're dinosaurs.
Okay,
we're going
extinct. So they bring in a third tier or a fourth tier. I mean, it's a domino effect, right? They brought in two tier to bring cheaper wages in. They'll bring in tier three to bring more cheaper wages in and knock two tier out of the way. Then they'll bring a tier four to knock tier three out of the way. I mean, it's a down spiral, because they said the only way to stay competitive and viable is to bring our wages down and our benefits, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, and as the tier three and four and five, which we have now, as we bring more and more of them in, and they're getting less and less, it's going to get to the point to where I'm saying is, whether we like it or not, they have the right to vote on a contract. I don't think it's right. So when they vote on a contract, like Leroy McKnight said a while back when we were talking in 2015 about contracts, said, look, these people are voting on pension language that they're not part of, and they have to vote on it, okay? And I think that's what's going to happen this next contract. We're going to have more temporary voting on a national contract that doesn't pertain to them. It doesn't. And as much as I don't think they should have the right to vote on that, the flip side of the coin is they pay union dues. So what are we going to do with that? Is that an issue that needs to be resolved before the UAW, who in limbo indictment right now, is pushing for that so that they can have their way?
They should have
Pardon?
Separate contracts. We should vote on ours for, you know, whoever's top tier, whatever the hell that is. Second tier should vote, have their own vote for their own contract. They
right.
want this, and we want that. No, they're two separate issues.
My thing is we need to bring equality. My thing is we need to bring equality back, because
that's the main thing. That's the best thing. That eliminates all this.
Because if you don't bring equality back, you're going to continue to have these issues. And the fact is these lower tiers, you guys better realize if you vote these contracts in, they're going to bring somebody in behind you, and they're going to cut you out of the deal. And it's going to be a domino effect, and it's going to keep repeating itself until we get equality back. And that's the key word, is equality. We got to bring it back. Otherwise, we're all doomed, every single one of us. So it doesn't matter what tier you are or where you fall, we're all going to end up falling.
Right. Don's been retired, 2 years now? Has it been 2 years?
Three. Over last April.
Okay, so just over 3 years. I thought it was two, but okay, just over 3 years. You've been retired. All right, so what we're losing is everything that I read in that letter, and we're losing rear springs, headlights, body side moldings, rear axles, hubs. I'm trying to think what else. The one thing we're keeping down as far as our area would go is they're going to continue to sequence mufflers. Other than that, everything else is gone. And I'm hearing that they're starting to cut the jobs. And I do mean this is from a very credible source. It starts next month. It ain't like this letter that our shop chairman put out next year. Don't worry about your job now. Bull crap. It starts now. It starts in October.
As these cars become more electrical and not so much based off of gasoline engines, they're going to start eliminating a lot of jobs.
Sure, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know if Don caught it, but on ABC 12, they were talking about the all-electric VOLT. You know, they've done away with the Volt. They're going to do away with, they're talking about doing away with Cruise. They're killing the Impala. They're killing six cars off. Well, now they're going to replace it with an all-electric Volt. And the one that they showed on TV, it's a very small car. It's all-electric. And the price is tested was $43,000.
Wow.
$43,000.
Start taking a bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to get a horse. Yeah. I'm ready to think about my Suburban. Thank you.
Hey, you hired in one, 70, 76, 75?
Who, me? Who,
yeah.
Me? I am not that. I was still in grade school. I hired in 78.
Okay, you hired in 78.
I had 35 years.
Somebody told me, and I thought it was like 76, 77, you guys would get a chuckle out of this, that there was somebody that worked at the Flint Truck and Bus. He had a special spot down at Post 3 over by the body shop where he tied his horse up. You heard me right, horse.
When was that?
Used to ride a horse.
And marijuana is not legal, really legal in the state of Michigan, but Scott has found a way to skirt around that legality. And he
did, he park in non-competitive parking?
There has to be special provision for a horse.
Oh, Lord.
Nature.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, they said this individual back in, it was still the early 50s. He'd been riding a horse for a long time. He still wore his guns riding through the city of Flint. He had sidearms on his horse, going to work. Standards
again.
Must remain. Yeah, so anyway.
Got it.
Well, we have
comic books or something. I don't know what.
Yeah.
We have 90 seconds,
well,
Scott. The lady just told me in my phone.
Hey, real quick, now we've kind of lightened things up. Let's get serious again. We lost a sister over the summertime, and we'd like to remember,
yeah,
Teresa Dodge. She was
absolutely.
She was a good part of the show for a long time, behind the scenes. And Teresa Dodge passed away this last summer.
You're right.
So we want to kind of reflect on that real quick.
Yeah, man, that's that was a shock.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
So
her son. They were very close, and he really took care of his mother. And
yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah. So, with that being said, before we get to
next Sunday, is 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Next Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard
Time,
and you guys can continue this conversation. This was a good, very good conversation. I enjoyed it.
Good show.
Half my year with one phone and headphones. So I was listening to my son, and I'm going, wow, I missed out a lot. I have a son in June, went from Kentucky to Germany for the next 5 years. So
wow.
he will be a colonel. And
a bird.
Yeah, a bird.
Wow.
A birdie.
Wow. Awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so thank you.
Congratulate me.
Yeah,
I'm
thank
not.
You. Well, thank you for the service when you talk to him next.
You know, it was my sperm, though, wasn't it? Hell yeah.
Oh, no, we're going down.
Wow. wow.
I got some smart sperm. That's all I'll show you. Anybody
well,
want to come
not,
and call me up after the show?
Let's not forget, you know, all these people in Texas and Florida this week and our prayers, too. There's a lot happening.
Did you see those pictures in Miami, downtown Miami? Wow.
Yeah, a lot of water.
It looked like a river.
Yeah.
And the last I seen, they were trying to save a manatee. They already saved three, and they're working on the fourth one right now, and hopefully they can save that big guy.
Right, right.
Yeah, or fish or alligators. Can you imagine? Did you see the picture in Texas of the alligator that was at the foot of the stairs of this guy's house in about a foot of water or something like that? Oh, my God. He walks in and there's this freaking alligator sitting, you know, this, hey, what's up, dude? Smoking a Marlboro at the foot of the stairs. And how he got in there.
And he wasn't little.
No, he wasn't little. He's a pretty good size gator. But, you got to watch out when you're down south. All kinds of moccasins and blue-ray, all kinds of things that bite will get you. And on that note, we'll talk to everybody next Sunday on behalf of Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm. And we have Big Brian and Scott. My name is Paul. We'll be back next Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us then. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and join us next Sunday night. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
I like that voice. I miss that voice.
Good night.
I can't get that deep, dude. I can't make it. Sounds like one of the Oak Ridge boys or something. I'll talk to you next week.
Good night.
Good night.